year 2008. We continue now with Sanhedrin 2B. Okay. Based Omit Base. Okay. Finishing up the Mishnah, first of all. All right, so a little reminder, the last thing that we heard was the fact that a majority, in order to condemn, has to consist of two. But how can you have an even number? Well, so this is about the Gemara. No, well, this is what the Mishnah is going to tell us.
What do you mean by a majority of two?
Theoretically,
there is no such thing as a majority of two.
Correct. All right. But theoretically, if 10 condemn, I mean, 10, let's say, acquit, right? And 20, and 12, vote to condemn, so you have a majority of two. But how many people does that leave? Leaves, right? So you have 22. Yet what did we learn about the Sanhedrin? It has to have 23. So this is what the telling us right now at the top of the page over here, to the conclusion of the Mishnah. The Mishnah first says, V'yem bezdin shokel, you cannot have a bezdin with an equal number, because how can you decide a majority in any case? Even let's say the other way around. I mean, what would happen, for example, if you had 10 and 10, or 11 and 11, you understand? So they wouldn't be able to make any decision. So therefore, Mosif Baldehem Odechon. So for this reason, we add one more judge to the 22 that we have. So Harekon Esu Mishlosha. So now we have 23. All right, so now the Mishnah adds the following. It says, the Kabo Yeheba Iyo Usaheiro Uyele Sanhedrin. All right. Remember, Torah says that Shoiftim Meshoitrim, right, the judges and so on, the constables, you have to put in all your gates. In other words, wherever you live, you have to have. But a Bezdin only requires how many people? Three people, for cases that we're going to discuss, okay? However, Sanhedrin, which deals with much more serious cases, the Bezdin can't decide that a Bezdin of three. We need 23. Okay? So, the question is, how much of a population do you need in a city in order to have it qualify to have a Sanhedrin over there? So this is what he's answering. He says, Kami Yehebo here, how many people do you have to have in the city? With Sahirui and Sanhedrin, right? So that it deserves to have a Sanhedrin, literally. Okay? So he says, Meo the Esri. Okay? He says, 120. Now, 120. Right.
Jewish.
120, of course, it means Jewish families, obviously. Because just 120 men, women, and children, that would not qualify, you understand? So he's talking about 120 families, okay? Exactly why they picked that number, well, it's a little bit doubtful in my mind, but there is a significance. But the significance is, if you take, for example, how many people were in the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah?
73.
No. When the people of Israel came back from Babylonia, so they established the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, literally the Great Assembly, okay? And how many members were there in the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah? Hi, it's good to see you again.
The meeting place of the Great Assembly.
Right, absolutely. So I hope that you're feeling well now. And Beverly, how are you doing? Right, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. Okay. Baruch Roifei Cholim. Okay. So, So how many people were there in members of the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah? The answer is 120. Why does the Israeli parliament, which calls itself today the Knesset, also have a membership? Based upon that, they have 120.
Well,
so,
that's an even number,
right.
Though.
Yeah, it's an even number. But they are not a Bezdin. The question is, how much of it, how many families do you need in the town that it deserves a Sanhedrin of 23? That's what the question was. Because if you didn't have that many families, it's not big enough to have a Sanhedrin in town. This is the idea. Yes.
Supposing somebody can't make up his mind and doesn't want to vote.
Yes. It could happen. In that particular case, it would be a hung jury, so to speak. Yeah. But in general, they tried to come to a conclusion, because there's also another principle that's involved, and that is shalola anotz es hadin, which means don't make justice too difficult for people. So that's why people should really make up their mind after listening to the evidence very carefully and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, I mean, don't cause unnecessary hardships, you know, for the defendant or whoever it may be.
Right. When did they stop using the language of Sanhedrin and just use Beit Din?
Beis Din could be any Beis Din.
Right.
As long as it has three people in it. Okay.
So when did they stop using the organization of Sanhedrin?
Oh, Sanhedrin. That...
Because we're still
okay.
Talking about...
Okay, all right. Okay. If you remember last week, we spoke about two types of Sanhedrin. One Sanhedrin was this which judged locally, right? And then there was the Sanhedrin Gedola, which was in Yerushalayim. That was the Supreme Court. Exactly. Okay. Now, the Supreme Court, first of all, used to meet in what they called the Lishkas HaGozis, the chamber in the Beis HaMikdash, which is made of hewn stone. There's a certain chamber over there. That was their meeting place. 40 years prior to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they had to leave because of Roman persecution already. And subsequently, they tried to establish it in other areas as well, wherever you had, you know, great chachomim. So they tried to establish it. So they continued to have a Sanhedrin Gedola in Eretz Yisrael until, let's say, about the 4th century, approximately, of the Common Era. Okay? By that time, the Christian persecution of the Jews was so immense that... they had to simply abolish it. Of course, we also have to remember something else, that side by side with the Sanhedrin, which had power over the Jewish community, but the Romans also had their courts. And in many cases, you know, they would usurp the authority of the Sanhedrin, and naturally they would also want to make it more difficult for the Sanhedrin to function as a group. This would be particularly true as far as capital punishment is concerned. It was the Romans who did it, the Jews did not. I mean, it's written in the Torah that you have capital punishment, but we have no evidence, in spite of all the pages that we're going to find in the Sanhedrin that deal with the idea of capital punishment, we have no idea as to actually was it carried out, not carried out, because in Roman times it was the Roman state that I mean, I don't know what was the role of the Jews as far as Yoshka Padra is concerned, okay? But nevertheless, there's no denying the fact that if there was such a character and he was crucified, certainly it wasn't the Jews who did that. I mean, it was the Roman authorities who did it. So that's what I can tell you. Okay.
So that was the end of the Sanhedrin. So that was the end of the 120.
No, that was the end of the Sanhedrin of 70 or 71, depending upon. Right. I mean, 71 is the official count, but as we saw, Rabbi Yehuda said there was 70, and Moshe was included among them. That's what he basically said. Right.
Of three, or whatever.
Yeah, that continued to exist. Right, right. Right, right. To this day, we still have, you know, Bezdin's, three judges, and so on and so forth. Right.
Okay.
I mean, when we have here in Springfield, for example, a conversion or something like that, you have to have a bezel of three in order to confirm the conversion, you know.
My grandfather's father held the title of chief judge for
this then. Right.
So I was curious as to what that meant.
Yeah, right.
So
obviously there was a bezel. Yes, right. It was a well-known Lithuanian community, absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. Suvalk, they had the yeshiva over there with everything else. Right.
Was
yeah.
Yeshiva there.
Right. Right.
So
yeah.
Father's side, the mother's side.
Right, right.
So that was,
right.
I wish the current generation would pay a little attention to that.
Right, okay. All right. So anyway, this, in my mind, would account for 120. But the next one, the Mishnah itself explains. It says, Rabbi Nechemya Emer, he says, Mosayim Ushloshim. You have to have 230 families living in town in order to be able to have a Sanhedrin over there. And what does he base it on? He says, Keneged Sorei Asoros. He says, this would be in proportion to the fact that the Torah says, if you remember, in Parsha Yisro, that Yisro gives an advice to Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, appoint people over over 50 people, and over 20, eventually it gets down, you know, to over 10.
Right.
So if you have and a judge, obviously, if he's in the Sanhedrin, he has to be somebody who's worthy to represent. He has to be a member of the Sorei Asoros. He has to have at least 10 people, so that it's on that basis he says that the town has to have 230 families living over there, 10 times, right? So each member of the Sanhedrin would to correspond to that. Okay. So far this is the Mishnah, as I told you. The Mishnah here is a little different than what we find in most of the Masechtas, not completely, but most Masechtas, you have, you know, a short Mishnah, and then the Gemara begins, and so on and so forth, and then there'll be the next Mishnah coming a few pages later, and then a discussion on that, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's what we saw in the Avodah Zarah, okay? But here, they put the whole Mishnah right at the beginning. So what is the chapter going to consist of? It's going to consist right now to take each sentence that we had in the Mishnah and analyze it, okay? So we start with the first analysis.
There are many. I almost count.
Right. The very first one, let me repeat again what it was. If we just turn back, those of you who have your Gemaras, you know. So it says, Dibei Mominos Mishlosha, right? It says that monetary, that, you know, cases of law that involve money have to have a bezin of three. And then the next sentence says, Uzelos V'chabolos Mishlosha, that robbery or doing bodily damage to somebody requires a court of three. Okay? So, but the Gemara now, coming back over here, they asked a logical question. They say, Atu gezelos vechabolos lav dinei mominos dinhu? Tell me, aren't cases that involve robbery or bodily damage, aren't they also dinim mominos? So in other words, the question is, why do we have to have a separate listing of gezeilos v'chabolos when dinim mominos would include that already? In other words, why waste words? You understand? Why waste words? It's dinim mominos, anything that involves whether you have a monetary dispute, you need three judges. Okay, God's fine. So why do they single this out? This is the question. So he says, Omer Rabbo said, Mahen Katoni. No. He says, we are, when it comes to the Dine Mominos Bishlosha, we are defining which Dine Mominos we are talking about. You understand? Namely, what are we talking about over here? Mahen Dine Mominos, what are we talking about? The answer is Gezelos v'chabolos. We're talking about cases that involve robbery or bodily damage. Avol hodos v'halbos, lo. However, cases that involve loans, this is what it comes down to. But let me explain the difference between hodo and halvo. The hodo means that the person who borrowed the money says, it's true that I borrowed money from him. The halvos is to say that, you know, the person who lent the money wants to make sure that he says, I lent money to so-and-so. Now, obviously, what is the dispute going to be about? The dispute is going to be about, was the loan ever paid, right? Mm. Is there any evidence to that effect, and so on and so forth. So, but,
so,
was it loan a gift, nor is the borrower
Yeah. Yeah, whatever, right, that's a possibility, correct, or you could say, you know, I never received any such money, or the person who lent the money could say, I never received payment from him, and so on. You know, the different tainus, you know, that they could have. So, but those are also dinimovnas, right? So the question is, why did they single out gezelos v'chabolos, and they didn't mention hodos, and halvos, okay? So, that's the question right now. It says, the tzricha, it says, and I need that definition in the text of the Mishnah itself. Why? The itano dine momenos, if I had learned only general heading, dine momenos, and nothing else, right? Then hava amina, I would have said, that this includes also hodos and halvos, you know, loans, etc. All right. So therefore, tana gezelos v'chabolos. This is the reason why the Mishnah then specified gezelos v'chabolos, right? Robbery, but it did not specify loans. Now it says for itana gezelos v'chabolos. And if it had said simply in the Mishnah, what? Gzeilos chabolos b'shlosha, right? Nothing else. Below katonim dinei momenos, but we had not learned the general idea of dinei momenos, then hava amina, then I would have said, hu hadin da'afilo hedoros chabolos, that the same thing, in other words, that what applied to gzeilos chabolos also applies to hodos and halvos. As we'll see, they want to make a distinction, but we didn't come to the reason yet why they want to make a distinction between them, okay? But bear in mind that what they're saying is, if we had only written dini momenos b'shlosha and nothing else, then in that particular case, we would say that hodos and halvos also require three dayon, right? If it had said just Xelos for Chabolos, then I might have thought that maybe I could learn Hodos Halvos from the fact that if Xelos for Chabolos, in other words, if it didn't say Dinei Momenos, but it simply said Xelos for Chabolos, I would say, just as Xelos for Chabolos, right, require three judges, so likewise, it's also true that Dinei Momenos, that, Hodos require the same thing, okay. So this is what they're saying right now. So the question is, the Haide Katone, the fact that the Mishnah has taught us Gezelos v'Chabolos, why did it specifically mention that? So the answer is Mishum de'ikor gibel de'ksive b'Gezelos v'Chabolos k'sive, it says. Because if we would take a look in the Torah, Parsha Mishpatim, where we deal with this aspect of civil law, okay? So over there, the actual case that is mentioned happens to be in connection with robbery, okay? or also a connection with bodily damage. What is the language that is used over there? So he quotes, okay, Dixiv, it's written over there, the Nikrav Bal Habayis El Hu Elohim. Okay? Gezelos, right? As far as Rabbi is concerned, it says, the Nikrav Bal Habayis El Hu Elohim. This is in connection with robbery, that, because in this particular case, what is robbery? The robbery that they're referring to over here is a person was entrusted with a pikodon, right? He was entrusted, right? Somebody asked him as a favor, please keep an eye on this for me, keep it for me until I can claim it back, right? And what did this guy do? He used it for his own purpose, okay? So that's what I mean when it says, right, Imlo Shalach. Yes, so it's written over there that the Baal HaBayis, in other words, the person to whom it has been entrusted, has to come El Ho Elohim, right? Which in this case means the judges, right? Imlo Shalach Yodo Bimlech Esrayehu. In other words, he has to take an oath that he did not literally stretch forth his hand. In other words, take for himself the work of that which belonged to the person who had entrusted it. So, as we learned at the first session that we had, that Rashi says, "Mali choval b'mamodo, mali choval b'gufo." In other words, what difference does it make whether the damage that has been done was done to his money or to his person? In both cases, it's gezela, okay? And therefore, we learn gezelas for chabolas. Understand? From the fact that it has to come to whom? To Elohim. Okay. Then it says, okay. That's what the Gemara is going to say over here, right? The seven nikra balabas Elohim, chabolos, right? We're dealing with chavolos, but mali chaval begufoy, mali chaval bemulnena. What difference does it make whether he injured him bodily or he injured him by taking his money, right? So tana mahen dine momenos. Okay, so the Mishnah therefore says, you know what kind of dine momenos we're talking about? We're talking about gezelos v'chavolos. Okay, gezelos v'chavolos. But when it comes to loans, no. So now the question is, but aren't they also dinei momenos? So why would they not mention? This is what we want to know. Why weren't they mentioned in the Mishnah? Okay? It's mentioned here in the Gemara, but not in the Mishnah. They don't have it. Okay? So, ilemo, if we are to say, delobin and shleisha, that when it comes to loans, you don't need a bezin of three. Then the Omar Rabbi Abo, did Rabbi Abo say, Shenayim Shedonu Dine Momenos, the Divrei Hakol Eidinehem Din? Rabbi Abo says, if you had only two judges who judged Dine Momenos, then everyone is in agreement that their judgment is no judgment. In other words, it's not a recognized court, right? Elah, so, in other words, implication from this is that we have to have three, correct? Even for hodos and havos, for loans. So what is the difference? Elah. But the difference is the lo be'inon mumche. We don't need expert judges when it comes to loans. Now, who are these mumchim? Mumchim means expert. These are people who have studied the law intensively, right? Have received authority from this particular case. It would be the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael, that they are permitted, to be members of a higher court and so on and so forth, right? So, these judges judge most of the cases that the Mishnah is going to mention that require three. However, the exception is loans. why not loans? So we'll see now the reason why. But we're not finished yet. Okay. Ella, the low being the minimum, we said, right? We did not require expert judges. So it says, Michael Sova. So what was he reasoning? What was he thinking? Ikosovar, if he's of the opinion that every partious course of Khan, the boy Nami Mumchen. The Ikosovar, every partious course of Khan, Shlesha Lobali. Okay, so here is a new case. Okay. Is Erev Parshios involved over here? Now remember, what I said is that the cases of civil law that we have right now, where are they found? They're found in Parsha Mishpatim, all right? But there are different types of laws that are mentioned over there. All you have to do is take a look at Mishpatim, and you see they deal with a variety of different things, okay? So, are we to assume that there is Erev Parshios, which means that one pasuk will apply to the same to other pasukim in the same section, or not? You understand? In other words, if the Torah itself mentions robbery, right? The Gezeirus Chabos, as we said, but it doesn't mention over here. It doesn't mention over here. Loans, okay? Doesn't mention loans. But are we to assume that the same rule will apply over here too? Because after all, they are also dinei mamonos, they still involve money. And in that case, we have to say that what applies to gezeiros for chabolos, namely that you have to have three expert judges, should also apply to hodos halavos. You understand?
Right.
Yeah.
In other words, it's like fighting a case, right?
Right, right.
David, it's like fighting a case.
Yeah.
If it works here...
Right, it should work over here, exactly.
Gezeirah Shavah?
Yeah, that doesn't apply over here, though.
It doesn't apply because it's not exactly the same.
No.
You're saying precedent.
Precedent, yeah, well, that's what the question is coming up.
Yeah. But the point is, if we say that they're interrelated, you know, we have a statement that says, Am Yisrael Arevim Zelozeh, which means each Jew literally is like
responsible
to the next one, exactly. So it's the same idea, the Erev. Erev means that you mix things. By the way, why do we call an Erev? Because originally, in order to create the boundary, for example, that you're permitted to work, people within the territory had to contribute to a common amount of food or something like that. You understand? Let's say each one contributes a matzah and a glass of wine or something like that. So, okay? So, this is the original idea. Right.
Terrible.
Right.
They speak about larceny and mayhem.
Right.
Well, that's the same. That's what it is. Robbery and bottom
line. Yeah,
bottom.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly the Chabolas. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but if we alter the principle of Erev Parshios, that one thing in the same section refers to another, in other words, we can apply a simple, the same principle, then in that case, the boy and I'm moving, then we should also have expert judges for what? For those who love ours, right? The ikos of our, the first opinion is, ain Erev Parshios course of Khan, that there is no Erev Parshios. In other words, each and every single case is independent of the next of the other one. You understand? Then, Shlosha Lomeli. Then what do we need? Three judges. Of course, you know, each pasuk only has a reference to its own, if we say that there is no Erev Parshios. Okay. So, so he says, the Oilam, the Mamis Gezart, he says, Kosovar Erev Parshios Kosovkat. The author of the Mishnah right? He does believe that Erev Parshas is involved over here, Uvedin Hu, and rightly it should be that in the case of Hodos Halavos also you should have what? Expert judges. So why don't we require mumchim in the case of Hodos Halavos, loads? He says, Mishum de Rabbi Chanina. This is because of a statement of Rabbi Chanina. The Omar Rabbi Chanina, because Rabbi Chanina said, Devar Torah, the word of the Torah is Echod Dine Mominos, the Echod Dine Nefoshas, Bidurisha Vachakira. He says that the same law of Durisha Vachakira, in other words, that you have to ask questions, you have to interrogate people very, very carefully, make sure, when did this happen, how did it happen, at what time did it happen, who was there, and so on and so forth. The judges expected, you know, to put a little fear into the hearts of the defendants, right? By asking these questions, or the heart of the witnesses, to make sure that the witnesses are testifying correctly, okay?
What's he saying? That you need a trained person.
You have to have them trained, right? Exactly.
Cross-examination.
This is true. But we didn't come to the next page yet, which we're about to go into right now. All right? So now we make the transition to Daf Gimel Omen Aleph. Okay? Pass.
Oh,
it's not wrong. We continue at the next page. Bob?
Oh.
Yeah.
Hello, where are we? May I? Okay.
That's the old one.
Huh?
It's the old one.
I need the new one.
Down here.
Yeah. Bob, this one over there.
Same one. The one we just had. We need what's the next one after this? Something.
Gimel of an olive.
Olive, yeah. We need a gimel olive. I don't have that.
Did I give that out? I just passed it. Hello. Oh, here it is. My apologies. I'm so enthusiastic. I forgot.
Here, one for the rabbi.
Right. Okay. All right. So. All right. So. What did Rabbi Chanina say? He said, according to the Torah, right, then both Dine Mominos and Dine Nefoshos, whether it involves monetary problems, right, or whether it involves cases of capital punishment, right, are subject to Drisha V'Hakira. You have to carefully interrogate everyone, the witnesses, the litigants, etc., etc., in order to try to establish the truth. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Mishpat Echad Yelochem, that you have to have one rule of justice. That's it. So he says, about time. So what is the reason that they said, the Omru, that they said, Dinei Momenos Levin and Rishwakira, that in the case of monetary affairs, you don't have to require that much questioning. You don't have to be so particular and so on and so forth that people will be afraid to even come to a court. So the answer is Kedei Shelo Tino Delis Bifnei Lovin. It comes to the fact that we do not literally want to shut the door before people who have to borrow. In the Torah, we know a person is poor, he needs help, then what do we have to do? We have to help him, right? What are we not permitted to do? Not permitted to take interest. We know that, okay? Not permitted to take interest. You have to give a person a free loan, okay? So the point is, we don't want A, to discourage people if they are in need for applying for a loan, but B, we want to reassure the person who lends them the money that they're going to get their money back. So under those circumstances, we don't want to make it more difficult by insisting upon going through a third degree interrogation that would have to take place in case of any dispute or something like that. So, yeah, this is what Rabbi Bor was saying. Yes.
I don't mean to what you're saying, of course, this is a very big principle that we never lend money in interest.
Right.
How did the Rabbanim in Israel justify the bank practices in Israel where everybody has a mortgage, everybody pays interest to the banks, and they all have loans?
You're 100% right. How do they justify it? So the answer is, yes, they have to get around the law. That's the answer. A corporation is not a human being. Something like that, you know, understand? Or some firm banks, they make you like a quasi-partner in the business, or something like that. It's a legality. But it would be impossible to do business in a banking business, if it weren't for that fact. They had to invent something in order to get around that. Right.
Thank you.
But nevertheless, you also know that we still have Gemilas Chesed, that... Yeah, gemach for this and everything else, right? You're in need, you come in, you borrow money, and you give it back eventually. Or they have gemach for all kinds of things today in Eretz Israel. Hospital supplies, wedding clothes, and things like that, and so on and so forth, right? People come and... Right. All right. So in order not to make it difficult for people who are involved in either borrowing or lending, that's the reason why, right, they decided that they did not have to undergo Derisha V'Hakira, third degree questioning. Elo Me'ato. So now the Gemara raises an objection. It says, Tohu Lo Yishalmuk. Look, if the judges that you have make a mistake in the law, then in that the case, and they don't have to pay, so Kol Shekein Atot Noel Deldes Blei Lovin. So all the more reason why you're going to make it more difficult for people to borrow money. Okay? The idea being, okay, if we say that you can have judges who are not experts, because who is involved in intensive questioning? It has to be an expert judge, okay? But if you simply say that we don't require it, then we're liable to have judges who are completely unqualified, right? There's a possibility. And if they make a mistake, a judge is empowered not to pay back for his own mistake if he's a qualified judge. If he's an unqualified judge, he really should pay back. Okay. But this is a question that they're going to discuss in the course of the Gemara.
Were they oral agreements or written?
Okay. You're talking about loans. As far as loans are concerned, you have two types. One is a milva mishtar. In other words, there's a note that's actually written, which of course I don't have to tell you is much more easily presented to a court for payment, right? And the other one is a milva baal peh. In other words, an oral one. And with the Ola, then this is where you have your Tzoros, you know. I don't have to tell you that. Right.
Are there witnesses from the Ola?
There could be. If there are witnesses, then it has the validity as if it were with a star, because they can testify that they saw him, what the amount was, and so on. That they can do. Right.
Why would they have inexperienced judges sitting on a case that they did not prove?
The answer is, we'll see, because they don't want to discourage people from borrowing and lending, and so therefore they felt that they did not need. We'll come to that, okay. But they felt, a couple of lines further down, they simply felt that they did not want to create tremendous difficulties because people
were qualified on it.
I agree, but we'll see in a second. Okay.
How about in American law, you have like an arbitrator?
Yeah.
Which is not as serious as a judge.
We'll come to that. Definitely, arbitration is also another form of settling cases.
Right.
Definitely. Right. That's what in Hebrew is called Peshara. Peshara means you come to a gentleman's agreement, so to speak. Okay. Hey, Shin, Resh, Hey. Peshara. Compromise. Right.
Yeah.
Peshara means it's a good word, believe me. It's a compromise, right, exactly.
So, I mean, that would take a lesser degree of
charges
to be able to handle that.
Absolutely right.
In
American. Yes, but that's on the Gemara too, also. Yeah, not on this page, but we'll come to it, yes.
In Israel, they have a system of getting guarantors for loans. Personal guarantors.
Yeah.
Is that going to play into this?
They have a system of what? I didn't quite catch it.
When somebody has to come forward and guarantee the loan,
you have to guarantee a loan. Yeah, of course.
But
somebody's an orave.
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah, absolutely.
That
sure.
might give a borrower.
Right. Right, absolutely, yeah. That really belongs already to Bobbis, particularly. But nevertheless, an Orev definitely, right.
And we're going to take the bar example.
Okay.
Let me tell you, one of the biggest nightmares you face in this, and I'm sure your daughter had this, is if you, for anything, even renting an apartment for a long time, there in Shul came to this one, who guaranteed, and then the original borrower walked out, and they're stuck having to pay like hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, that's true. Unfortunately, it happens.
It's a nightmare, really.
It's left holding the bag, exactly.
Right, yeah.
Whole process. Right. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't mean that.
All right, so getting back over here, all right, they say, look, if you have inexperienced judges, right, but nevertheless, the judge doesn't have to pay back, then in that case, you're certainly going to make it even harder. So he says, Iyahachi, if that's the case, he says, Tate Katani. We really learned two things from the Mishnah. We've learned that Dinei Momonos Bishlosha Hidyotos. In other words, that Dinei Momonos in general, you can have just ordinary people serving as judges. Yeselos for Chabolos, but when it comes to, you know, robbery and bodily damages and so on and so forth, that Bishlosha Mumchen, then you need three expert judges. So that's the first thing. The Ode, Shlosha Shlosha Lomeli. Why do they have to mention three? Right. Hello. Omar Robos, but Robos said, Tarte Katari, we learned two different things in the Mishnah. Mishum the Rabbi Chanina, because of Rabbi Chanina, who said we don't want to make things tough when it comes to getting a loan. Rav Acho, Bereda Rav Iko, Omar, he said, Mindo Arisa, he says, as a matter of fact, he says, from the words of the Torah itself, Chatname kosher, one judge alone would be kosher. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says, Betzedek Tishpot Amisecha. In justice, right, you have to judge your fellow man. Okay? Now, Tishpot, is that singular or plural? Should be, one judge should be sufficient, according to him. But Ela Mishum Yeshvei Korodes. But the reason why they require three, right, is because not everybody is an expert, because of the people who are literally sitting on the corners or something like that. Meaning, people, you know, ordinary people in the street and so on and so forth. So they say, Atabitlosa. So tell me, he says, and if you have three of them, Mele Abi Yoshvik Vados, don't you have then people who are lady gayers over there who are doing something now? So he says, Ito Lo Yishalmu, and if they make a mistake, they won't pay. Kol Shekein, and the Fisher Yoshvik quote is that everybody will want to be a judge because they can judge and not have to pay. So they say, my Ikra bein Rava l'Rav Acha. Says, what is the difference between Rava and Rav Acha, Berei the Rav Ikra, who is the son of Rav Ikra? He says, Ikra bein Ayhu. One point of difference between them is the Omar Shmuel, an opinion given by Shmuel, who said, Shnayim Shedonu Dinehen Din. Says, if he had a court of only two people who gave, you know, a verdict, then whatever verdict they gave, you know, that's it, you know. That's it. Elo Shenikru Bezdin Chosef. But rather, even though, in other words, their verdict is accepted, but nevertheless, they are considered a chutzpedika bestin. Because you have to have a three.
What do you mean by chutzpedika?
They presumed that just the two of them alone are sufficiently capable of making a judgment instead of having three.
Oh, I see.
So that's their chutzpah, right.
Is that because you should listen to the thoughts of
Yeah, absolutely, right. And as we said also before, remember on the previous page, Ein Bezdin Shokel, you cannot have an even number, because you have to be able to, you know, to come to some sort of a conclusion. So that's the reason why you have to have an odd number.
So what
right.
they're saying, that even though you didn't use three, you only used two.
Right. This is Shmuel's opinion, right.
Is acceptable.
This is Shmuel's opinion, right.
The court is tainted?
Yes, definitely.
It's tainted. It
should have been three, absolutely. Right.
So they didn't have the benefit of hearing the questions of a third person.
Yeah, it's true. With another opinion, and so on, exactly.
Is there such a
right.
thing as an appeal? After a verdict?
To a certain extent, the answer is yes, but
so
not completely.
Felt,
not completely.
Felt,
yeah.
Because there was only two.
If you could prove, you know, that there was a mistake in the Torah law itself, mm-hmm. they judged contrary to it or something like that, then in that particular case, it could be appealed. But if you can't prove it, then that's it. Whatever the verdict is, that's the verdict.
Do all three have to be both
Kol Achad?
Do they have to be unanimous in their decision?
No, because what do we learn? Achrei Rabim Lahatos, you follow majority. So you don't require that they have to be unanimous. Right. And as a matter of fact, we'll learn sometime in the future that if it's Dinei Nefoshes, it comes to condemn a person to death, if all the judges agree, all 23, that that person deserves the death penalty, the verdict is thrown out.
Is what?
The verdict is thrown out. because there should be at least somebody who doesn't go along with that.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Right.
I don't see why that's a reason.
What's the reason? Because they feel, in all cases, they try to be Malamed Zchus. Wherever possible, they're always looking for merit. Okay? So they feel that if you have 23 people, not one of whom tried to find some kind of merit in the defendant, so it's a prejudiced court.
Even though it's an odd number.
Right.
In the case of witnesses who see somebody getting murdered or killed, and they're reliable witnesses.
Right.
Why should there be anybody that doubt that?
When you question them, find out what's the story. Maybe it's something, whatever it may be. It's very difficult.
Maybe there was somebody that came from behind and pushed him and,
who knows?
Or something.
Whatever.
We didn't see.
Indirect and direct.
That also leaves the door open for being dishonest about it.
Right.
No, he leaves the door open because they'd say, well, we don't want this. We all agree that he's guilty, but we have to want somebody that doesn't agree. So somebody will have to say he doesn't agree.
Right.
In order it doesn't get thrown out.
That's right.
Well, it could be collusion within.
That's collusion.
Not necessarily. I mean, we hope that the judges do find reason in their own conscience to try to find some kind of merit. You understand? You're thinking in terms of a jury, but they're not a jury, they're judges, and obviously they have to discuss the case among themselves and so on and so forth. I mean, there's no question about it. And as a matter of fact, in a capital case, they're not allowed to come to a decision the same day that they hear the case. They have to think about it during the night and first make a decision the following day as to what it should be. Because we're always trying to find, some kind of merit for the person to save him from the death penalty if we can. This is the feeling. All right. Yes. Eventually we will. I should only live so long, and we should all live so long. Okay, but we'll get there.
I think that by choosing this theft, hopefully we'll give reason for
absolutely. Okay, very good.
we got to pass the bar,
Right.
Wow.
Okay. So at any rate, let's just finish the next line. It says, "The Rava Leslie the Shmuel." Rava does not agree with Shmuel. Okay. The Rava Chabered the Avika is the Shmuel, but as far as he would agree with Shmuel. All right, so we'll stop at this particular point tonight.
Only one judge?
That he would accept, two judges. But as we said before, even though Shmuel said that the verdict is a verdict, it will be sustained, but nevertheless, they are real chutzpahniks in that they presumed that just the two of them alone, to judge. You have to have at least a third party.
So clearly says you need to.
All right, tonight is, first of all, the 30th of April, the year 2008. We are continuing now in Sanhedrin, Daf Gimel, Amud Aleph, down towards the bottom of the page, beginning with Nezek, Vachatzi Nezek. Okay. All right. The previous argument, if you remember, that we just heard a few minutes ago, dealt with a court, how many judges there should be in the court, and we saw that the feeling is always that we should have a majority, so that the three is the usual number. We'll see that there are some discrepancies because people come with their own theories as to how many there should be, but in general this is accepted that the Besen has three. As long as they're dealing with what do we call dinei mamonos, in other words, things that involve money cases. Okay, so now we get back again to the Mishnah, which said Nezek v'chatzi nezek. Nezek is damages, and the chatzi nezek is half damages. Of course, what are we talking about? We're talking about the fact that if a person has an ox, that's the example that the Torah gives, okay? The ox kills another animal, okay? And then in that particular case, what is the compensation that has to be paid? So obviously, if it were full compensation, then you know there wouldn't be any question. That's what I'm saying. If it were full compensation.
Oh yeah.
But that's what that is not what the Torah said. The Torah said that if the animal was not an animal used to goring, just what happened is an accident or something. So the penalty is only half the amount of the damages. Of course, that would have to be assessed and everything else. It's more complicated than that. But for the time being, I mean, for the pshat, we'll understand what I mean on that. Excuse me. So the first question that the Gemara says is, Nezek Haine Chabolas, right? These kind of damages, it was caused by goring, right? So it's the same as chabolas. What did we say what chabolas is? Chabolas, we said, is, you know, you hit somebody, and then in that particular case, you cause damage. So why should it be different than the general rule, which says that chabolas, you know, is judged by a court of three, and why do we have to single out, especially, nezek and chatzi nezek? It might have been all understood simply from the fact that chabolas requires three judges. So why did the Mishnah single it out? That's what they want to know. So he says, yeah.
You want some water?
I think I'm going to have to. My throat is very bad tonight. Yeah. Telling you. I'm a little bit sedate right by now. I'm a little bit sedate. Okay, you'll have to forgive me. Must be the after effect of Pesach. Okay. So how now is Rabbi Yoshio going to get the fact that you have to have three judges? Okay. So it says, why does it use a word like Elohim for a judge? So Shema Binor, from this we see Lemin Yoda, that you have to count that pasuk because it's an unusual expression. Had it simply said Allah Shofet, I would not count it. But the fact that it uses Elohim, this already implies somebody who is talking more koshuv and so on and so forth, and that's the reason why you do have to count it.
Why would they use a word?
Why?
Yeah, I mean,
to us, of course, Elohim, we normally think of God, right? But still, we know. I mean, we say, tell him every Tuesday, but Elohim, it's all about us. El, be care of Elohim, Yishpot. First of all, we say, God appears, right? Ba'das El, right? And then the assembly of God, if you wish, but Bekar of Elohim, Yishpot, in the midst of the judges, he judges. In other words, Rebbeinu Shalom judges too, okay? Judgment has to come from the Rebbeinu Shalom. Right. As we say, I mean.
So what you're saying is they use that word there for purpose.
Yes. And this is the argument of Rabbi Yoshua, is that the implication is it's more than just an ordinary judge, that you have to have somebody who is talking,
we
would say a dayan, a mumcha, you know, somebody, you know, who is well learned. Right. Because on the previous page, if you remember, there was the opinion that in case of loans, you don't need expert judges. You can have gimel hedyotas. You can have three ordinary people.
Yeah.
With the hope that at least one of them has a little seichel and knowing, you know, how to judge. But there's a difference between hedyotas, people who are not trained scholars in the law, as compared to, somebody who's a trained judge, which is what Elohim over here implies, or that the word dayan which is, you know, a Gemara word. I mean, it's not a word that we're going to find in the Bible. But it's a word that we find in Gemara all the time. A Dayan, okay?
Dayan, yeah.
Right. Excuse me. Yeah.
Relax.
The Sanhedrin doesn't
need an odd number? Sanhedrin should have an odd number too.
Yes,
definitely. Not according to Rabbi Yehuda. We'll get back to his argument at some time in the future, okay?
I got the impression that they were, even though they were invited in more than 70,
yeah,
they were not all used at the same time. They were experts in various places.
Well, you know, first of all, the Sanhedrin Gedola, you know, they sat around in a circle and so on and so forth, and behind them were students, Talmidei Chachamim, but who had not yet
achieved
the level of being. One of the expert judges would leave. Then in that case, it could be supplanted with somebody from the, you know, the Talmidei Chachamim, and it would go sort of like in rotation. You know, the most important one, the greatest one, you know, had place number one, then came place number two, number three, and so forth, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So, getting back, all right, so good. So now we have a reason for Rabbi Yosha, right? So what about, what does Rabbi Yonason say about it?
He's going to have a counter-argument.
Yeah, right, of course he's going to have a counter-argument. Okay. Right. Yeah, the Rabbi Yonason, he says, literally, Abinakar, he says, well, you're talking about a special mention, because remember, he says you don't count the first person, right? It's Kedamra Inche, the word Elohim, it's like what people normally say, is that Manda Islay Dino, whoever has a trial court, you know, has to go to the court. So Likrav the Gabi Dayan, let him go to the Dayan. And as I said, the word Dayan, you know, is the Gemara language, whereas the Torah uses the word Elohim instead. Right. Of course, I'd also use the word Shofet. I mean, that's what we say, Shoftim, Veshotim, Titen Nechor, right? We have to have judges and police force, etc., etc. Right. Okay. Right. Yeah.
Are these Aramaic?
Right. Diana? Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's a mixture of Aramaic and Hebrew. Yeah, this is Aramaic, right. Rabbi Yoshio, how about him? Says, Lesley Bezid Noita. Are we going to say that according to Rabbi Yoshio, he doesn't require a majority? The whole Tanya, didn't we learn that Rabbi Eliezer Benesha Rabbi Yoshio Galili Yomer? He says, Ma Talmud Loimar. What is the meaning of the pasuk which says, Lintois Achare Rabim Lahates? That you have to make a decision and you have to go according to what? According to the majority, right? HaTorah Omro, the Torah says, Aseh Lecho Bez Din Noita, that you have to have a court, you know, which has, which is capable of having a majority vote. So we have to say that Rabbi Yoshio is of the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda, to Omar Shivim, who said that the Sanhedrin Gedola, you need what? 70. Okay. That none, Sanhedrin Gedola, hoy social Shivim Biyechod, you know, the Chachamim say that the great Sanhedrin consisted of 71 judges, and Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shivim, right? And he says, Rabbi Yehuda says 70. So, Amor, the Shemat Le, Rabbi Yehuda, Misanthevdi Gedoylo. So the argument goes as follows. All right, so far it seems, yeah, he's in agreement, right, that what? That you don't have to have a majority court, right? You can have a court with even number of judges. So, Eimod Shemat Le Rabbi Yehuda B'Sanhedrin Gedola. All right, he says. All right, maybe there's an argument, you know, that you could justify Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to the Sanhedrin Gedola. Why? Dichasive cry. Because we have Psukim in the Torah that say 70. As I said before, what is the Psukim in the Torah? It says, Es for Li, Shivimish Mizikna Yisrael, right? The Torah says that Moses is commanded by the Rebbeinu Shalom, gather unto me 70 people from among the elders of the people. Okay, as elders of the community. So he has grounds for saying 70. Okay. But does he agree with him in other kinds of courts? And if you say there's no difference, there ought none. I can prove to you that there is a difference between the Sanhedrin Gedola and other courts, because we've learned in the Mishnah, Semichas Sekenim, V'arifas Eglo, V'shloisha, Divrei Rabbi Shimon. Right? Rabbi Shimon says that when it comes to the Pa'ahelim Dover, the congregation has made a mistake, right? And they will have to bring Echatos, right? So, in that particular case, then the elders of the community have to put their hands on the head of the animal that's going to be sacrificed as the chatas. Okay. That's the samchu, I mean, the smicha that they were talking about before. Okay. And how many did we say you have to have? You have to have three. Okay. The Mishnah says you have to have three. And likewise, we learned the same thing in connection with the Egla Rufa, you know, the heifer that they break the neck in order to compensate for a murder where they don't know who the murderer is. Right. So, again, three of the Zikne Ho'edo, you know, the city which is closest to the victim,
yeah.
Right, they are the ones who are required to put their hands, you know, on the Egla Rufa before it is slaughtered, right, and so on. And this is Rabbi Shimon's opinion. And along comes Rabbi Yehuda Omer b'chamisha, and he says that they need five judges. Right. But the point is, three and five—they're not even numbers. In either case, Rabbi Yehuda says that you have to have five judges, which is an odd number, right? You have to have a majority number, an odd number. So in that case, you have to say that only in the case of what? The Sanhedrin Gedola, does Rabbi Yehuda say that you have to have exactly 70 people, an even number. But he does not hold that in reference to any other court. Right? The Amrin, and they also want to explain also how does Rabbi Yehuda get to five instead of three, which the Chachamim said, or what Shimon said, okay? How does he get five? So they say, how does he get it? My time in the Rabbi Yehuda, what is the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda? He says, v'somchu, take a look at the verb v'somchu.
Yeah.
It's in the plural. So plural always implies at least two. Okay. V'somchu, shnayim, Ziknei, the elders of Shnayim, right? So we see that two and two, right? V'yein Bezdin Shokol, and you cannot have an even number in the Bezdin. So Mosifin Alehen Odechod, so they add one more judge to the four. And Harekon, hey. And so now we have five judges. So what they're saying is the Rabbi Yoshia Adifa min the Rabbi Yehuda. He says he was more extreme than Rabbi Yehuda. The Yidlu Rabbi Yehuda b'Sanhedrin Gedola who the last lay. Rabbi Yehuda says only in the Sanhedrin Gedola he doesn't accept the idea that you have to have an uneven number, right? But Bishop Dina Islay, however he agrees in all other kinds of courts, you have to have an odd number. Rabbi Yoshua Bishop Dina Nami Leslie. Whereas we would say that Rabbi Yoshua in other courts, he doesn't require he doesn't require a majority. The Eloh So tell me, what does he do with the pasuk that says that you have to make a decision according to, as we said before, a majority? So how does, what does he do with that pasuk? So he says, Mokim lo bedine nefoshe. So he says, this applies only to cases where capital punishment is involved. Okay? Because over there, obviously, it's a much more serious thing, and so therefore, you have to be able to make a decision in that case. She says, but in monetary affairs, no. Why not? Because in monetary affairs, what's good for one is not good for the other, or vice versa. Whoever the judges decide, you know. But even two judges, according to him, would be in a position to decide, you know, who's right and who's wrong, or what it has to be. Even though the Chachamim don't agree with it, that they say you have to have three, but this is his own private opinion. That two would be enough. Right. Yeah.
They might even be looking for a consensus.
Yeah.
You know, when they have an even.
Yes.
And it's monetary, you know, and
right.
They say, you know, maybe a difference of when they, you know, get together. And
yeah, obviously, if they can't get together, they need somebody else to come. Right.
You know, with a with a capital.
Right. Either they disagree and simply dismiss the case and let some other court try it, or they'll add at least one other judge, you know, to help them make a decision or something like that. Yeah. All right. So it's theory. I mean, in reality, as I say, the court really has to be three. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. As we saw before, I mean, Shmuel says you can have a bezdin of two, but still, the sages say such a din, you know, is a bezdin chotzef. A bunch of chutzpahdiks of just two people alone, judge. Yeah, yeah. okay. Yeah. Well, Ella wrote it down. So, getting back to the Mishnah that says, Shnayim omrim zakai v'echad v'chayov, right? Two say that this litigant is the, you know, the one who is right, and the other one says no, on the contrary, he's wrong, right? Zakai. Then in that particular case, how do we hear the judge? That he is innocent, right? That he's the right one. Shnayim omrim chayov v'echad v'zakai. And on the contrary, if two say that he, you know, that he's wrong, and one says that he's right, chayav, then he's wrong. So nemo the lok Rabbi Yosha. So are we to argue then that Rabbi Yosha doesn't agree with that? So we say I feel the same of Rabbi Yosha. So even Rabbi Yosha in the final analysis does agree with the idea, but he doesn't get it from Pesukim. Maisa lo. He derives it by logical reasoning, the Kal V'Chomer, from the fact that, as he said before, right, in Din Nefoshes, I can justify it, right? Ma Din Nefoshes da Chamire, inasmuch as Din Nefoshes, which are more serious, Omer Rachmona, and there the Torah says, Zil Basaruba, follow the majority, Din Momenes, then in the case of monetary matters, like Holchikain, then all the more reason that you should also have a majority to make a decision. Okay. I think I'm going to stop at this point. Okay. Tonight is the 7th of May, the year 2008, and we're continuing now from where we left off last week in Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Gimel, on its base near the bottom of the page. Just want to summarize for a moment what was the discussion based on last time. Okay? Discussion was, first of all, about the problem, you know, judges. do we have to have an equal, do we have to have an odd number of judges? The reason why we said that is because Rabbi Yoshia wants to find out, why do we need three judges? Because the word Elohim, if we remember, is found in three different psukim, dealing, you know, with the judgment. And so therefore he says, because the Torah says the word Elohim three times, that's why you have to have three judges. Okay? Along comes Rabbi, right.
Reason,
yeah.
But
then along came Rabbi Rabbi Yochanan, and he has a different cut. He has a different argument. His argument is that Ein Dorshin Tchilas, which means that when you have a series of psukim dealing with the same subject matter, the first one only serves as a general introduction, and you can't count it. Subsequently, those that followed can be counted. So, the first Elohim, he says, he cannot count it because Ein Dorshin Chilul. Okay? So, how many is he left with? So, he's left with two Elohims, right? And he says, but Ein Bezdin Shokol, you know, you cannot have an even number of judges because the Torah says that you have to have a majority, right? So, that therefore, he says that what they have to do is then to add a third judge. This is what he says. You add a third judge, so that therefore you have three judges. Okay? So getting back to Rabbi Yoshia, they say that in reality he doesn't disagree on the principle of Ein Dorshin Tchilah, right? Now, if we say that, then it means that the first Elohim cannot be counted. So how many Elohims is he left with? He's left with two, but that's an even number, right? So first they say, okay, he first of all said that, at least the reasoning is that he agrees that you can have an even number of judges to make a decision. After all, first of all, remember, Shmuel said the same thing on the previous page, saying that you could have two judges who, if they judge, then the judgment is valid, but they're considered what? A chutzpahdik court, right? Bezdin chutzpah. Right, right. Yeah, they knew about chutzpah. That's right. It's an old Jewish trait.
An ancient trait.
Right. Then, okay, but getting back to Rabbi Yochanan's opinion, all right? To Rabbi Yoshia. Alright, so Rabbi Yoshia is now he's stuck. So we're saying that he agrees then with Shmuel that two judges would be enough, but he's being very consistent because he has another authority to base his opinion on. Who? That was Rabbi Yehuda. What did Rabbi Yehuda say about the Sanhedrin Gedola? How many people? He said 70.
Yeah.
He said 70. The rabbi said 71.
Well, that had to be an odd.
Right, that has to be an odd number. But he said 70. And, you know, it's based upon his interpretation of what the Rabbeinu Shalom said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Es for the Shivim Ish, right? Gather unto me 70 people. And, you know, they are to be the leaders of the people of Israel, you know, and to judge, etc., etc. Okay?
Well,
yeah.
God said 70, right. Would
they
count then Moses would be the
70? Well, that's the machlekes.
Oh.
This is the difference of opinion,
ah.
Exactly.
Okay.
According to the sages, it's 70 plus Moshe,
right,
but according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's 70 including Moshe.
Ah.
So if you follow that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, then in that particular case, what do we have to say? We have to say that that Rabbi Yehuda then would agree, you know, that you could have a court with just an even number of judges. Okay? So this is where the argument stands at this particular moment. So then they get back to Rabbi Yoshia and they say that Rabbi Yoshia is even more extreme than Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda himself also said that in the case of Dini Mominos, you have to have a majority. So, the last thing that we heard on the tape is the fact that in reality, even Rabbi Yehoshua agrees that you cannot have a court without a majority. But he derives it not through the Pesukim, but how does he derive it? He derives it through logical reasoning. If in the case of where that penalty would be involved, you have to have an odd number of judges, then in that particular case, by kal v'chomer, in other words, all the more so, you should certainly apply the same thing to a court that deals with monetary affairs. So that's where the matter stands at this moment. So now we're going to continue. Yes, of course.
Across the board.
Right.
Because there'll be a lot of this.
Yeah. Arguing back and forth. You're right.
Back and forth. But
right.
In the final analysis,
yeah.
Didn't they always stay with a majority? Wasn't that the rule?
We said that even Rabbi Yehoshua agreed eventually. I mean, that you have to have right.
Right.
Theoretically, you could have an even number of judges.
Yeah.
But in reality,
they
you have to have a majority. Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Right. And the way the Chachamim themselves, determined eventually that you must have, because the Torah says, Acharei Rabim Lintos, that you have to make a decision according to the majority, then in that particular case, that would be the application. All right. So now, the Gemara continues, and it says, Tanu Rabbanim. When it says Tanu Rabbanim, it means that this is a statement that comes either it's a Baraisa or it's a Tosefta. In this case, it happens to be a Tosefta. Okay. Says Dinei Mominos Bishlosha, right? Chachamim say that a court that judges monetary cases, you have to have how many judges?
Three.
Rabbi Omer Bachamisha, but Rabbi, that's Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, he says that you have to have five judges. So the question is, how does he get five instead of just plain three? So he says, the reason is, Kedei Shigomer Hadin Mishlesha. He says, the reason is that you have to have three judges agreeing on the final verdict. So how can you have three judges agreeing on the final verdict? So the answer is, you have to have five judges so that you have a majority. This is his opinion. Okay, I don't have to tell you this, not the accepted opinion. But, when it comes to the Gemara, you want to find out, what does this authority say? What does the other authority say? And, the ball bounces back and forth, right? So, Gemara immediately asks, Atu bitlasa bilo gemadino, betray. So it says, if you have a court of three, then, right? Then couldn't the decision be rendered by two out of the three, right?
Why is five?
Right. You don't need five. Three will do just as well, right? So it says, Hoki Koamar. This is one of the reasoning of Rabbi. He says, "Nei shegabar din mishlesha." Right, inasmuch as he feels that you have to have three judges in agreement on the verdict. So, alma from this, kosava loso kikseva bigabar dina kseva. That his opinion is that where the Mishnah says that you have to have three judges, it means three judges at the final conclusion, but not. But not at the beginning. In other words,
three judges were in favor of whatever decision.
Exactly right. So you'll have to have five. This
why?
Is his reason. This is his reason. He felt that you have to have three judges in agreement. Okay. Chachamim felt two can do the same job. Okay. So that's why. Okay. So.
What if you have two?
Yeah. Yes.
No,
you're talking about three.
Right.
You can't reach a conclusion that way.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Nope. So, now they're going to dispute this argument of Rabbi, right? Okay. Megadef Rabbi Abohu. the Gadish Bar Rabbi Abu. So Rabbi Abu disagreed vehemently with this idea. The way when we use the word the Gadish, it means that it really shows contempt or something like that.
Really?
That's what the word means in modern Hebrew.
The
Gadish? The Gadish, right. Show contempt for somebody. Yeah. But they all say, the Talmud it doesn't mean
like
quite so severely, but obviously it means that, he certainly disagreed with the reasoning of Rebbe. Okay?
In other words, he gave him a finger.
And what is his argument? He says, Elamiato, he says, right. If we follow your reasoning that the number of judges that you have to have in the majority at the time of the conclusion when you're ready give the verdict, right, then in that particular case he says if I follow your reasoning, then the Sanhedrin Gedola has to have 141 judges, right, so that the verdict can be reached by 71. Or say, hey, Sanhedrin Katan. No. Rebbe says you have to have three at the conclusion, right? He says when the Torah says that you have to have a majority, it means at the time of the sentencing. When you're ready, when you have the verdict, you're reaching the verdict, at that time you have to have three. So that's why Rebbe says that you have to have three. That's why he says you have to have five, because you have to have three representing the majority.
It's not
logical. Go argue with Rebbe. But this is why Rabbi Abu attacks him, okay?
That's why he says,
right. He attacks him. He says, look, if I follow your reasoning, that how many judges do we have to have at the time of the conclusion? We have to have, as we see, 141, right?
So that
71 would be the majority.
Well, that,
not only that,
right,
right. Right? And also it's Hey Sanhedrin Katana, and how about the smaller Sanhedrin, meaning the one that you need in order to judge, then in that case it says Sricha Arboim Chamisha, right? You have to have 45 judges. Kideshi Gaber Hadin Shloshim Esrim. We said that the Sanhedrin Katana consists of 22 judges, right? Remember, Eda Shafetas, Eda Marcellus, right? So the two Edas, how many are them? That's already 20, right? And then you can have Mr. Shokel, and so therefore we said we had another three judges, and so that you find up with 23, okay?
Holy
so
God.
If this is the case, according to Rabbi's reasoning, if 23 is the required number at the end of the trial, then in that case, how many judges do you have to have in order for them to, be considered a majority? So the answer is, you have to have 45. Okay. So that the judgment can be rendered by 23. Ella, he says, but now, he says, Esfali Shivim Ish Shomarach Bona. Torah says, gather unto me 70 people, right?
Yeah.
That's what the Torah said. And what was the Torah talking about? Mishah Sasifa Shivim. At the time when you have to gather the judges, in other words, when the judges first sit down to judge, then what is the required number? You have to have 70, says, is what the Torah says. So in other words, the Torah is not talking about the Gemara Din when they're ready to give the verdict, but the Torah is talking about at when they come down to you, when they sit down, to begin the proceedings. Okay? Irv.
Go ahead.
You need a Gemara cut.
I know. It's usually logical and understandable.
Right.
When,
yes.
I don't understand the difference. If they sit down with 70,
right,
then how can more than that make 70 is hearing the evidence.
Yes.
70 are hearing the evidence.
Right.
how can more than that judge? I mean, that, then that would, it would only be 70 who would be giving a verdict.
That is correct. That's what he's saying. He's saying that. So exactly. Yeah, in other words, when you go, he says, not according to how many you need at the end of the trial, but at the beginning of the trial. And they are the ones who are competent enough to give the verdict at the end of the trial. Okay?
When they talk about...
Right.
Well, it could be a majority. You could have a majority,
but Right. Right. And then, right? When the Torah says that literally, the Edor, which, as we said, means 10 over here in this case, right? That they judge, in other words, they judge for guilty, right? The Yitziloho Edor and the other 10 judge as not guilty, right? I mean, they're trying to figure out how they get 23, right? Right? So, Nami Mishas Shpitas Oida. So, likewise, he says, even the case of the Sanhedrin Katana, the Torah indicates that we're talking about how many judges do we need in order to, you know, to begin the proceedings, and presumably, the same judges who begin the proceedings are also the same judges who are going to eventually
render the verdict.
That's what he's trying to argue. Okay? So, he says, any question? Yeah. Oh, my tape stopped. No, it's still recording. Yeah. It'll stop eventually. Okay.